Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a live special one-hour edition of Weigh In Sports Talk. I'm your host, Brian Tarvin, and tonight I'll be joined with two co-hosts, Chris Ricketts. He was on the last show, and Trey Patterson. They were both on the show and discussed baseball with us this past week. So welcome, guys, and happy Easter.
Hey, happy Easter to you guys, too.
Happy Easter from the West Coast there, Tarvino and Ricketts.
it's a great day with the family. I haven't seen my family really since Christmas, so I got to see all the nieces and nephews, had some good food, played some baseball outside, so we had a real good time. I hope you did the same.
Oh, yeah, it's always good to catch up with the family and, you know, spend some good quality time and hunt some Easter eggs and eat some good food.
Absolutely.
Well, guys, I have to admit, I was a little disappointed. Oh, Cujo's loose, guys. I have to admit, I was a little disappointed. I thought this weekend I'd be watching Tiger Woods try to win another jacket, but, you know, he fell apart. And so I don't know if you guys watched the Masters. I'm sure you did. A guy named Bubba Watson won it, but Phil Mickelson had a great showing, but what's your thoughts of Tiger Woods? What happened?
Well, he's just not there yet, you know. I mean, he's to close out these majors. I mean, you've got to have everything right with your swing, and not only physically, but mentally as well. And you could just tell he's not quite there. But I figured the late charge that Mickelson made. I mean, I thought he was primed to win this thing. And he comes out on the third hole, par three, and triple bogeys a par three in the Masters, and that pretty much did him in. It was just I couldn't believe what I was watching with Phil, you know, because he's got three green jackets already, and I just thought this was his for the taking, and he just fizzled out. And you know, Tiger, he's still got a little bit of work to do, but I think eventually he'll get there.
Trey, what do you think of Mr. Tiger?
Well, you know, Tarvin, it's kind of interesting. Every year we hear it, and then this year is no different. Everything Tiger participates in, it's the Tiger story. I think Chris is right. I think it's more of a Phil Mickelson story. I mean, everyone's focusing it on Tiger, but, I mean, was this ever his this year to win? I don't think it was. I mean, he didn't look like he was ready, as Ricketts said. I think he had to focus in on the guys who are really playing well right now. And just because Tiger's the big name doesn't necessarily mean we need to pay all attention to him as he on each tournament he participates until he actually can show us he can win the big one again. It's been a while since he won one.
Yeah, he won that tournament 2 weeks ago, and even I got a little crazy with it. And I think Vegas had him 5-1 to win this. And we got to remember, he hasn't played like Tiger in a long time. And I just think there's something else going on with Tiger Woods, and I'm thinking it could be a back injury, just something with a neck. Something's not right physically with him, and maybe mentally, but it's been a long time for the mental part. But maybe he's just wearing down. I heard another guy talk about that yesterday, is maybe he's just wearing down. He's getting older. He's over 35, and maybe he's just not Superman anymore.
Well, I think, you know, Tiger's going through another swing change, and, you know, he's done this. This is probably about the fifth or sixth major time that I can remember that he's actually changed his swing. And Tiger does that, you know, to stay on top. You know, he's always looking for ways to, you know, to improve his game. And I know, you know, he keeps saying, you know, he's almost there, he's almost there, he's almost there, but I kind of have to wonder, you know, why change something that has worked, you know? I mean, this guy was chasing Jack Nicklaus down for the most major titles, and it almost seems like he just does it out of, you know, he's trying to find that one or two extra strokes, you know, out there on the golf course just to get him back in that elite level. And, you know, with all this stuff that's went down, you know, with him and his wife, you know, it's allowed all these other players to catch up to him, and now he's not Tiger's not feared like he once was. And I think that was a big advantage that he had early on in his career. I mean, everybody was scared to be in that final group with him because they knew what was going to happen. He was just going to come out and destroy them. But now he's lost that edge, and he's trying so desperately to find something to get that back. And you know, of course, that's only going to come with him winning more major titles and competing or being competitive on a weekly basis.
Yeah,
that's actually a really good point, Tarvino. I want to touch on that real quick. Is I think the fear factor. I mean, why fear Tiger? If you're on your first major tour and you get paired with Tiger, are you really fearing him right now? I don't think you are.
No.
Did you see him today? Like, you know, he kicked a golf club, and this is, you know, golf's a gentleman's game, and I know a fan complained on him today. He had a bad shot, and he kicked his club and was using swear words in front of an 11-year-old kid. So, you know, something's going on. I mean, Tiger, he's going to have to realize, like you said, Chris and Trey, the fear factor is gone. Maybe he doesn't know how to play with someone that doesn't fear him anymore. But on your swing adjustment, Chris, he is doing a new adjustment and everything, but you have to go back sometimes. If that's not working, and you're going to get embarrassed on TV, you might need to switch back to what won a tournament for you again, you know. I mean, it was terrible. I've never seen Tiger Woods play this bad. And I think it's the worst round worst tournament he's ever played in.
Yeah, and usually he's money at Augusta, and you could just tell that he wasn't there this weekend. But, you know, I kind of agree with Trey. The bigger story this weekend to me was just the collapse of Phil on today. I mean, this was his tournament to win, and he didn't get it done.
I see Bubba Watson crying on TV after he won. I guess he was as shocked as we were. But, you know, in Augusta, you have to nail these par fives. Those are the holes you have to birdie. Those are almost, you can't give those away. And Tiger just fell apart, man. And it's sad to see because I'm a big Tiger Woods fan. I think he's one of the best athletes of all time. I mean, he's just a great golfer. And I just want to see him do good again. And I think I'm pushing for him a little too much. But, you know, the Masters is over, and but we'll all hope Tiger, you know, does better. But, you know, let's talk about, a little bit about Bobby Petrino. I don't know if all the listeners are aware, but earlier this week, Bobby Petrino had a motorcycle accident. He wasn't wearing a helmet. He didn't want to call 911. And at first, you know, it was just he had an accident. He cracked some ribs, but he's going to be okay. He had a neck injury. But later on, it was told that he was with a 25-year-old woman on the same day. He was with his wife all day, spending the day with her. And this is the same girl that he hired a few weeks ago to be on his staff. And she's an ex-volleyball player for Arkansas. And she's engaged to be married in June. Bobby Petrino's married as well with kids. So, man, this could be ugly in Arkansas. So I guess the question I want to pose to both of you and the listeners out there is what should happen to Bobby Petrino? Should he be fired, you know, being a leader of men? Should they just sweep it under the rug? What do you think, Trey?
You know, Ricketts, I think this, and Tarvin, I think I might disagree with you guys. I think he shouldn't be. And the reason is, you know, in the grand scheme of things, is he a leader of men? Is he somebody, you know, if you're a parent and you send your child to play football, You want somebody to obviously lead them in a moral example as well, but at the end of the day, I mean, this is SEC football. You're all about wins. And while there is some morality that in the SEC and the coaching world of college football you want them to have, at the end of the day, it's a personal matter. It's not necessarily a criminal matter. Certainly it's an infraction to not wear your helmet, you know, when you're motorcycling. But he didn't go out and he wasn't buying cocaine or anything like that. I think this is one of those things where you may suspend him for a couple of games, make it a story. But if I'm an Arkansas fan, I'm telling you, he's done well for Arkansas, and I want him to come back and win games for me. And I think that's my bottom line. I don't think this is a fireable offense. It certainly is a scandal, but I wouldn't fire him. If I'm the AD, I keep him on.
Chris?
Yeah, I'm kind of torn. You know, I think this is definitely not I wouldn't call it a fireable offense due to, you know, him breaking any, you know, laws or, you know, doing anything like that. But what I kind of hang my hat on is the fact that, you know, he wasn't forthcoming at the beginning of the accident. You know, he tried to sweep it under the rug, and then lo and behold, it comes out that he's got a 25-year-old girl, you know, riding on the back of the motorcycle with him. And, you know, he's constantly, you know, he's been misleading the press. You know, he's only given out certain information that he thinks that is warranted, and then, you know, hey, we find out all this other stuff's going on. So, you know, the fact that he tried to cover it up, I think is going to end up getting him fired. Now, you know, whether he should or should not be, you know, that's going to be a question that the AD is going to have to answer. And, you know, that's going to be tough because you're definitely going to have a fan base, you know, divided. You know, the sentiment I've seen from some of the fans is that they're outraged at his behavior. But then you're going to have other fans that's going to be there with him, you know, because he's produced the results out on the field. And like Trey said, this is SEC football. It's big time. It's all about winning. And, you know, let's face it, he's brought Arkansas back to relevancy in the SEC. You know, Arkansas for so long was just a mediocre program. And, you know, in his 3 or 4 years there, you know, he's gotten them to a Sugar Bowl, you know, a Cotton Bowl win last year. You know, they're constantly, you know, they're ranked up in there in the top 10. He's got his program, you know, firing on all cylinders right now, and it's going to be a tough call for the AD. But I think, you know, I think at the end of the day, he's probably going to get the axe, and not necessarily for what happened, but just the way that he's been trying to cover it up.
Well, I look at it, and I'm, you know, I'm going to look at it. Nobody's perfect, first of all. I'm not out here to judge him and you know, point fingers at him, but you know, I'm going to weigh in and tell you what I think. The first thing is I'm going to lobby on the side of he should be fired and he will be fired. And when I look at it, first of all, he lied to his athletic director and president. You lie to your bosses. So I know Trey and Chris, if you're at work and you tell your boss a lie and you're in a management position or such, you know, you're going to probably get fired or at least reprimanded. But I look at this as a, first of all, he covered it up. Second of all, he's a married man. You know, he's going to have to go into these parents' living rooms and sit there and look them in the face and tell them, you know, trust me with your son. You know, I'll teach him how to become a man to get him to the NFL. But, you know, you can't even handle your own home. You can't even be faithful to your own wife. And I'm not trying to judge him or anything, but when you're in leadership, when you're a leader of men, you know, and you're a role model, you're held to higher standards than say, Trey, you are, if something happened like that, where, you know, you're not going to get fired for your job, but you're not a leader among kids, over kids making millions and millions of dollars a year. So I'm thinking, you know, in order for the athletic director not to look like a total idiot and consumed with the fact that it looks like he wants to just win, they're going to have to let him go.
Well, you know, Tarvin, you bring up a good point, but there's one thing that I would say is not that Bobby Petrino, he's looking for young men, not young women. And maybe if he was recruiting my daughter for volleyball, I might be a little more concerned. But we're talking about a football program here, and I don't know. I just don't think this rises to the level where I'm going to send a good coach packing in the SEC. That's just my piece, though. Maybe I'm on the outside here.
Let me poke a question, you guys. Do you think the fact that the woman that, you know, he had on the back of his bike was an employee of the university will have any buy-in as to what they're going to do? You know, having an affair with an employee of the university. Now, I don't know if she was directly under, you know, Petrino's supervision. I don't know how, you know, that works out. But I'm thinking, you know, that may have some significant weight in the AD's mind when it comes to making this decision.
Well, that's a great point, Chris. And yes, she is directly working for Bobby Petrino. He hired her personally. And, you know, it's like, you know, you're sleeping with your boss and everything. But Trey, I agree, you know, he's not these leading men, and this is a woman thing. But if you were in Penn State, you wouldn't want your son going, would you? if he was the coach Sandusky or one of those guys. But I just think, you know, he's held a higher standard, guys. He's held a way higher standard, and he did it with an employee. And when how is he going to discipline the kids there and be a role model for them? It's hypocritical. I mean, I know nobody's perfect, man. I'm telling you. And, you know, a lot of men do the same thing, you know. The only difference is they're not Bobby Petrino and they're not in a light to where it can be seen. And really nobody cares. But this day and age with all the social, everybody's got a camera phone. You're driving down the road and all of a sudden you see Coach Petrino in Arkansas and you snap the picture and all of a sudden you have a girl on the back of his motorcycle. Right there, rumors get started. But when you have a wreck and you cover it up and you lie about it, and she's engaged to be married. And again, Trey, you're a lawyer, so you tell me. I mean, unless there's proof, you know, they had an affair, that he could have just been taking a joyride with her. But we all know that's not true. But.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is going to be tried in the court of public opinion. I mean, and Chris brings up a good point. There very well could be a morality clause of Petrino's contract he signed. A lot of athletes and they're very popular among professional athletes and coaches, and so he may have some clause that he violated, and her being an employee up under him actually may be in a secondary clause. I mean, without being able to see the contract he signed, we're not exactly sure what he violated, but I think this is going to be one where he may have violated a contractual provision, but this is where the AD for Arkansas is going to come down to. What does public opinion think? What do the fans who buy those tickets think? Because if they want him out, he's going to be gone. I mean, that's just the way it is. But I'm just telling you, Arkansas fans, if he's gone next year and you go 6-7, no, don't complain because you brought it on yourself.
Exactly.
What in the world is this woman doing with Bobby Petrino? Have you guys seen how ugly he is, or is it just me?
Well,
I mean,
you know,
it's terrible.
I'm not going to touch that one.
I mean, he looks like a 90-year-old man instead of a 50-somebody-year-old man. He's a jerk. Everyone in Atlanta here hates him. I mean, if he comes to Atlanta, he's going to get the mobs coming after him. I mean, they hate him here, and he's done some questionable things in his past at coaching, and this is not probably the first time it happened, because if you get caught with something, it's probably not the first time you've done it. So, I mean, you know, sure, I mean, football is not – you know, the morality of it, but I'm sure his wife's going to leave him. But I think a good football coach is someone you got to be well-rounded with everything. You got to set an example. And I thought Jim Tressel at Ohio State was one of those kind of coaches until all of that other stuff came out with him. So really hard to trust anyone. You just got to, nobody's perfect. Like we talked about, nobody's perfect and without sin. So, I just think at the end of the day, you try to find the best person you can to lead a team, and nobody's going to be perfect. But what Bobby Petrino did, lying to the officials and the police and everything, that's a fireable offense with an employee, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Arkansas, they definitely got a tough decision to make on this issue. And I think, you know, with the Jim Tressel scandal and, you know, you've had examples of misconduct, you know, as far as, you know, improper relations, like the Mike DeBose situation at Alabama, and then even, you know, the Mike Price situation with the strippers. I mean, all this stuff is going to weigh in on Arkansas's decision, you know. I mean, and I think I don't think it's going to end well for Petrino. I think the longer this thing draws out and the more time that the media has to sink their teeth into this issue, like Trey said, this trial is going to be conducted, in public opinion, and I just don't see it ending well.
The thing about Bobby Petrino is he's established in Arkansas. Like Trey said, he's won. He's a very successful coach. Mike Price hadn't proven anything that he could win at Washington State in the back then. So it's a little harder decision for Arkansas to make than Alabama did. This guy, when he gets off the plane at Alabama, he's at the strip club. You know,
he was ready to party.
And then the famous quote he said when he walked in the door. It's rolling, baby. It's rolling, he said.
Well, you know,
I'm glad. What was that, Trey?
I was just saying, like, you know, that's it's all very interesting because, I mean, the big point you bring up is there's a lot that's going on in the SEC and with morality type stuff and with, you know, but maybe people get caught up in the party atmosphere and the party rankings as coaches versus what they should be worried about is their top 25 rankings. I don't know. But Petrino maybe moved himself up on both.
Okay. Well, let's stay with another scandal going on. And in the NBA, we have the Orlando Magic. You know, you got Van Gundy, the coach, Dwight Howard, the superstar. What do you think of Dwight Howard going up to the top management there, president, execs and all that, going up to the president, telling him he wants Van Gundy fired, and he leaked it to Van Gundy, and Van Gundy comes out to the press, the media, and saying that Dwight Howard went to this guy and said he wanted him fired. What do you guys think about what Dwight Howard did and how Orlando handled this whole situation?
I think this is just a mess. I mean, I think the GM is to blame. Dwight Howard is to blame. And Van Gundy's to blame. I mean, there's an equal amount of blame to go around for each one of these three people involved. But to me, if you're the owner and the GM of this organization, you cannot let the star player dictate, personnel decisions. I mean, you've got to squash that. And I know there's a ton of pressure on Orlando to keep this guy there because, you know, they lost Shaquille O'Neal to the Lakers, and the last thing they want to do is to allow Dwight Howard to walk. And, you know, I think it was last night or Friday night, they were playing a game, and at the end of the game, you know, Dwight Howard's, you know, he's complaining, you know, about his back hurting, and, you know, he's like, you know, I just want to let everybody know I gave it, you know, my 110%, and I never quit on my teammates. And to me, that all just seemed kind of staged because it was as if he needed to tell the public, hey, you know, I'm in this thing, and I'm here for the city of Orlando, and I'm willing to stay, but that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know. Maybe I was just buying too much into it or putting too much into that. But just because it happened right after all this stuff went down, you know, of him and Van Gundy in the interview. But, you know, I can tell you this. If they allowed Dwight Howard to make these decisions, I mean, they're just setting themselves up for failure down the road. I mean, I know this guy, he is by far the best big man in the game, but that GM has got to put his foot down. And if Dwight Howard did come to him and say, hey, I want a coaching change, you know, that's when he's got to tell Dwight Howard, hey, I'm the GM. It's my job to determine who the coach of this basketball team is going to be, and you got to get on board.
Yeah, I mean, Carvin, Chris brings up really good points. I mean, this is a sort of a failure all around, as Chris said. I mean, first of all, I mean, you know, this could have been dealt with in-house. We as the talking heads would have never known about it. I mean, that Dwight Howard, you know, may have done this, and then the GM may have said something. But then when the coach comes out and he gets almost complaining to the media, that's where I think that this is just this has got out of hand. When your coach is whining to the media about my star player tried to fire me,
yep.
And Chris is right. I mean, come on. What is going on with that organization? I mean, get your stuff together, Orlando. You've been lucky to have him for this long. And Chris is right. You can't let him dictate it, but you can't have your coach going to the press to whine about his player either. And so this is where one of those things where maybe just by doing this, Van Gundy's left the GM with really the recourse just to can him anyway. If your coach can't keep it in-house, I mean, can you really expect to have a team meeting, you know, where the coaches sit down and say, hey, let's air our grievances and not expect the players to go to the media? You know, that's what coaches expect. We have a closed-door meeting. We're going to keep it closed doors. But when your coach is the one who does this, I mean, that that to me is just an entire organization of distrust among everyone right now, and they're going to have to do something to completely rehaul this team. And hopefully if you're an Orlando fan, you want to keep Dwight Howard, but I think Van Gundy may have just ran his mouth off a little too much there. And I mean, did Dwight Howard do something correct? He didn't. But, I mean, Van Gundy just amplified the error there, and that's just not good.
Yeah, I'm real disappointed with the way it all was handled, and especially from the GM's standpoint of going to tell Van Gundy this. I think Dwight Howard should have been able to go to Van Gundy without first going to him, but I don't know. It might have happened. But I think Dwight Howard's caused a lot of drama with this team, and I think it's time, you know, he leaves. But when Orlando should have traded him to the Lakers while they still could have gotten, you know, three players and helped their team. But now when he leaves, they're screwed. They will not be able to compete. They're going to be terrible. And I just think the coach here dropped the ball as well. He should be more of a man than to go out and actually have to say it to the media. I can understand him going to Dwight Howard in the locker room saying, "Hey, I heard you said this. You know, you keep it in-house." But when you start going out, like Trey said, whining to the media, trying to draw attention, that's terrible. So Van Gundy is done at Orlando. And I think so is Howard. So I just think at the end of the day, it was handled wrong. And he should be able to – I think he should have more character than to go up and try to get this guy fired. I think he should shut his mouth and play the game. And that's the problem with pro sports. The players make so much more money than the coaches. And I think that's why, you know, the coaches want to stay in college and do, because they realize you can't get respected in the NFL unless you've earned it. And it's hard. Look at Saban. Look at Spurrier. These guys, they fell flat on their face in the NFL because those NFL players could care less what they said. Because at the end of the day, they could go up to the owner and say, "Hey, fire this coach or I'm leaving." And I just think it's a joke. I think the whole organization is a joke of Orlando. And I think, you know, losing Dwight Howard this year would have been the best thing that could have happened to him. Losing them next year is not going to be good because they're not going to get anything in return.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I mean, if you're an Orlando fan or just even a basketball fan, this kind of situation isn't good. I mean, Orlando with Dwight Howard has been a good presence in the East. I mean, the East has just been so weak as it is, and yeah, you need superstars out there, and having this whole debacle with Orlando is just solidified how the East is a two-team race to me. I mean, they don't have a chance in the playoffs, so I really think that this whole issue could have been handled in-house and been a lot better.
Yeah, and I think it's a prime example of just, to me, kind of how immature Dwight still is. I mean, you know, to me, this just is a prime example of, you know, why everybody kind of questions his leadership ability. I mean, a true leader, you know, somebody like Kobe Bryant or, you know, LeBron James or somebody, this situation would have never come to the media's attention. I mean, it would have been dealt with in-house. And I just think, you know, Dwight kind of, he's always kind of been that, I don't want to say, you know, completely immature player, but he's had, you know, immature moments. And, you know, this was just another prime example of that. And I think he made a terrible mistake. And I think, you know, a big reason why they probably couldn't handle it in-house is because everything I've read or seen about, you know, his relationship with Van Gundy is just, you know, it's a tolerable one at best. And so until those two guys can get on the same page and talk to each other, I mean, that this situation is not going to get any better, and it's going to end up, I think, like Brian said earlier, I think you're going to see Dwight traded, and you're probably going to see Van Gundy out, and Orlando fans are just going to be left, you know, holding their hands out saying, "Hey, what just happened? We just lost our coach and our best player."
Yeah, I mean, you're leaving yourself with Jameer Nelson as your is not going to be good for them.
Yeah, exactly.
If anybody out there wants to weigh in, give us a call, 646-716-5564, 646-716-5564. It's a great show so far tonight, a lot of information, you know, a lot of things going on in the sports world, but back to Howard just for 1 minute. Anytime, imagine Van Gundy, you know, he feels a little insecure. I mean, imagine all season he's having to hear this drama about Dwight Howard, Dwight Howard, trying to make, if you're a coach, you wouldn't understand if you're not a coach, but trying to win your locker room when you have your best player trying to divide your team. I mean, that's a tough task, and I think Van Gundy hates him. I mean, I think he's just tired of it. Van Gundy's a good coach, but he handled this very, very bad, like Trey said. He should have kept it in-house. But sorry, Orlando, you're going to suck again. It's just a matter of time. Next year, you probably won't even win 10 games. So, Jameer Nelson, get ready to carry it. So, if you're a fantasy owner of him, you might want to trade him right now. Right, Trey? Hello? We have a bad connection, guys?
I'm still here.
Okay. I think we lost Trey. We'll see if he can call back in and get back on with us. But he has dropped, so we'll get him back on in a minute. Let's head to the Major League Baseball, Chris. Man, you know, we had a show this past week, and, you know, we talked about the Braves and everything, but what do you think about them dropping to 0-3 first series against probably the team we projected, all three projected last in the division?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't a good opening week for any Atlanta Braves fan. You know, it goes back to our concerns, I think, that we all three kind of brought up when we were breaking down the NL East and giving our evaluation of the Braves. It's, where's the hitting going to come from? And, you know, I watched the opening day game, and, you know, Johan pitched a great game. But, you know, they had chances to score and move runners over, and they just continuously fall into this funk. I mean, for lack of a better term, I mean, they just can't seem to execute the small plays to produce the runs that just give them a little bit of breathing room, you know, for their pitching. And to lose to the Mets of all teams, I mean, to get swept by the Mets, that doesn't care. Going back to last year, I think they've lost, 11 or 12 consecutive games. And I'm almost starting to question, you know, Freddy Gonzalez as a manager. I mean, here he is. He had this monumental collapse last September. And now we're starting, you know, 0-3 and, you know, I've tried to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I don't see the response from the players from his, you know, style of management. But, you know, they're definitely going to have to rebound. I know they've got some tough series coming up, and so we'll see how it goes from here. But right now, it doesn't look very promising. What was your take on it, Tarvino?
Well, I was just, you know, very disappointed that, you know, first of all, I'm going to go back to the end when the Braves just collapsed there at the end. And all listeners, I love the Braves, guys, so you know as well as I do. So I think Trey's back on with us now. Trey, are you on?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, sorry. But, you know, the Braves, it's like you didn't change anything in the offseason. You didn't make any acquisition, free agent pickups. You were content to stay with the same when your regulars right then wasn't good enough. So very disappointed in the way the Braves handled this entire offseason. And they don't have really any strong pitching. They don't have that go-to player right now. And they're just not a very good team. And I think, you know, they need a first baseman. And I think they need some better starting pitching. And the hitting, just unless Prado goes on a tear, Hayward starts hitting like he's capable of and supposed to, it's going to, and Brian McCann, of course, he's got to play well. Braves are going to struggle without those guys. So I just very disappointed that they didn't catch somebody in the offseason. I mean, there was a ton of pitchers out available to get. There was, you know, Pujols was out there. And I know they weren't going to get Pujols, but you had Fielder out there. You had some great players that were available. And the Braves just sit down and didn't do anything. Trey, what's your take?
Yeah, I think you guys, and sorry about my connection a while back, but this weekend really, and the opening weekend was kind of an interesting weekend, and the Braves are sort of the team that we all were kind of teetering on with our predictions. But watching them play this weekend, I was not impressed. They looked like a very mediocre ball club, and I think you brought up all the good points. their pitching, starting pitching, you know, isn't it as dominant as they may think they are. And maybe they'll get better throughout the season, but they look like a Punch and Judy team. And they look like they're a team dying for that, you know, first to third and hoping that somebody hits a sack fly. And that's not how you win. Certainly you can win games that way, but you're not going to win 80 to 90 to 100 games that way. You're going to have some serious run producers. They just don't seem to have it. And the starting pitching, you know, it was okay this weekend, but okay does not win for you, and especially getting swept by the Mets. I mean, we all predicted them to be in the basement, and here they are sweeping you.
How about Johan Santana hasn't pitched in a year or two, and he almost shuts the Braves out. They're no hit today by was it Nisi? What was his name, Chris?
Yeah, Nisi pitched for the Mets.
Yeah, and almost they were no hit in the seventh inning. So, okay, you're facing a pitcher. Johan Santana was great at one time, and you can't even score. I just don't understand. Trey brought up a good point. It's like they're just hoping to get a sack fly to get somebody in, but that's okay when you have dominant pitching. But, you know, you don't have dominant pitching. So you have to score runs. Look at Detroit. You know, they're going to score runs, and they have good pitching. So Detroit, did you see that game they put, that show they put on yesterday, guys?
Did you see the comeback today?
that was an amazing comeback. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I was listening to our show again, and I was thinking about some of what happened this weekend, and we talked about, you know, is Boston's bullpen going to hold up, you know, without Bailey? I mean, they blew two saves this day alone. You have, you know, Aceves came in with a three-run lead, and I mean, like, I think he had five pitches before he blew the save, and the game was tied. And then, you know, they bring in the other guy who's back up, you know, B, and what does he do? Blows it again, and he gives up three runs quickly, and this time the Tigers win. The Tigers are really good, and we all thought that, but they didn't seem like they were afraid of anyone in that Boston bullpen. And if that's the case in the NL East, if teams aren't afraid to get into that seventh inning on the Boston bullpen, that's going to be a real big problem. And the Yankees just got swept by the Rays at home, so the Rays look pretty good. And did anybody notice that the Orioles swept somebody? I mean, how crazy
really?
Is that? Yeah, the Orioles are.
they're a good team. I mean, I am surprised with that, but you know, I think we all talked about Tampa. How I know you and Chris picked them to win the division, right?
Yeah.
I picked the Yanks, but I wish I could go back now. But baseball's a long season, you know, and
yeah, it's first week.
It's all about, you know, it's a long season. My gosh, it's long, but I mean, it does show you a little bit about your team, you know. Early in the season, too, you know, I look at the Braves and, you know, their weakness is exactly what we said. We talked about the Red Sox, exactly. So it's not like we're making this tough up. You know, we study it. We understand what's going on. But I wonder, why don't they study their own team? You know, Boston should go out and try to pick up somebody to help them. Look at the Yankees bullpen is great, you know, and that's what you have to have. You have to have that to win for a long season. And the Braves have that, but they just don't have anything to get. They don't have anybody to get them to those last two innings.
Yeah,
so
the Braves are
definitely interesting.
Yeah, the Braves are definitely lacking that power hitter in the middle of the lineup that's consistent. I mean, you know, it seems like the Braves, they just constantly, you know, we have hitters that are just streaky, you know, like Dan Uggla and Hayward may get, you know, hot. It seems like our most consistent hitter is Brian McCann, but, you know, right now nobody's hitting for the Braves. I think the highest batting average for anybody on their team right now is .250, and so when you have that, I mean, if you can't score runs and you can't give those starting pitchers some breathing room, then it's just going to spell disaster. I mean, you know, the Braves, I believe they got some good young pitching, but the key word is that they're still young. And so they're going to need some help, you know. They're going to need some early leads so they don't feel that constant pressure to go in, you know, and shut down a team for six innings. It seems like every time I watch the Braves, they're always behind or it's always tied going into the sixth inning. And so they need to find something, you know, that helps spark that offense. And until they find that, I think what we saw this weekend is going to kind of be the norm for the year.
I agree. I'm just not very impressed. But I'll tell you, like we talked about, I'm very impressed with Tampa sweeping the Yankees. I mean, how many times do you see the Yankees get swept? It's not much. And you got a team like Tampa that has pitching. They have great hitting. Bullpen's not too shabby, you know. So, a great manager. So, the Tampa could be in for the long haul, guys. And I think, I didn't know this, but I didn't know Pena got traded back to Tampa.
Yeah, he came back. And, boy, I, you know, Tarvin, that's an interesting point that I don't think a lot of people – that was one of those moves that not many people thought much of. But maybe there's something in the water with him in Tampa, and maybe this is one of those guys that gels so well in the clubhouse that people just start playing well. Because watching his at-bats today against the Yankees, and I'm talking about Pena, he looked like the player back when he hit 40 home runs for them. I mean, his head was down on the ball. He really got great swings in. I mean, some of his at-bats today, and he hit a home run as well, but just his overall at-bats, he looked like a player who was rejuvenated. And maybe that's one of those clubhouses that is so well gelled. Maybe that's what the Rays have to fall back on. Maybe him and Longoria get along. Who knows? But they really look like a team that's having fun already.
Yeah, you don't know what's going on in the locker room. I think it's one of those mistakes Tampa made letting him go. And I know he struck out a lot. And, you know, if you have him on a fantasy team, you know, that's not a good player to have. But for a team like Tampa that, you know, it looks like they really love him. I mean, they made a mistake and got him back. And I think he really missed Tampa as well. So good luck to Tampa this season. I'll be pulling for him in the East. And hopefully they can pull it out, anybody but the Yankees and Red Sox, you know. I'll be pulling for Tampa, and we'll go on. We're going to change gears just a little bit, and we have about 18 minutes left in the show. 646-716-5564, if you'd like to call in. We're going to change gears to the draft. We have the NFL draft coming up in a couple weeks, and, you know, it's starting to heat up the talk. I hear Minnesota is about to change their number three pick away. Trey, what are your thoughts of the draft right now? What do you see? Who's the surprise player in the first round that could really be a game changer?
Yeah, this is an interesting point about the NFL draft. I mean, coming up, that whole three pick is going to be really interesting, because if the Vikings trade that away, and a team moves up for that third quarterback, and that's going to be interesting if we have three straight quarterbacks taken. Now, I don't know. What do you guys think of Tannehill going up all the way up to three? I think that's what I've been hearing a lot of folks talk about. I just don't know if I buy that that's a good pick. I think that might be one of the draft surprises and maybe misses. I don't know. What do you guys think?
If Tannehill goes three, GM's going to get fired. I've been hearing, you know, that name too flying up the boards. I just don't see it. I don't see where he's going to be warranted to go that high, especially when this draft is loaded with some good talent, you know, especially on the offensive line, the Mac Khalil. So you're telling me you're going to take Tannehill over a bona fide left tackle that's probably going to be a Pro Bowl for the next 10 years, and Matt Khalil? I mean, if that does happen, that would be a big surprise.
Tannehill, are you kidding me? I mean, where did this kid come from? I mean, I saw him play last year. He's okay at A&M, but, I mean, I didn't even know he was on the board, and all of a sudden he's shooting up. What did he do in the offseason? I mean, you know, I question that.
They said he had a great workout, and, you know, he looks good on overall numbers. But I've heard a lot of interesting whispers about that the Vikings trade down, and one of those teams like the Dolphins who are looking for a quarterback maybe the person who come up. And I got to tell you, if that happens, I think Vegas odds, only one of those three kids are going to work out well. And I just don't see all three of those quarterbacks being pro ready. And I think the only one I like is Andrew Luck. I'm not really sold on RG3 yet. I may be the only person out there who's not. But I don't know.
I'm not. I hate RG3 up there that high. Andrew Luck is the best quarterback. He will produce. He will be a game changer. Indianapolis was trying to get a new workout with Robert Griffin the third, but I'm glad they didn't. They need to stick with it. But like Chris said, if a GM does that, they get him that high, somebody's going to be fired. I mean, that's terrible. I mean, you have Trent Richardson. He's a beast. You have Justin Blackmon, a receiver. You have Claiborne, the defensive game changer. And about that, did y'all hear about his test? He took some test this week and scored like a 4 on it. And he was
the infamous Wonderlic.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll tell you what, I would take him over anybody in that draft almost. He's that great. And I don't care if he can read, write, count, whatever. I don't care. But I've seen him play in the SEC, and I've seen him shut down some of the best receivers in the country. So, I mean, he's a great player. And I think people put too much, and that's what I wanted to talk about. Some of these guys put too much into some of these intangibles. And if I'm drafting somebody, I want to know how smart they are. Maybe Claiborne wasn't good at testing. Maybe he just was nervous. He was having a bad day. But as far as Trey talking about the workout, Tannehill had a couple of good workouts. Well, I had a couple of good workouts this week, too. But you don't see me going trying to play the Falcons, jumping up the board, you know. So I think it's ridiculous. And, I mean, how are you going to pass on, like he said, the USC offensive lineman? How are you going to pass on Trent Richardson? How are you going to pass on Blackmon and some of these guys that are just monsters against Tannehill?
Yeah.
Seriously?
I think a lot of these GMs, they get wrapped up in the measurables, and especially, you know, with the combines, they get so fixated on what did he run the 40 in, you know, what is he doing in the shuttle run and whatever drills that they run. And they almost have their, what I call their combine, you know, tunnel. They have a combine tunnel vision, and that's all that they really look at. They're just looking at the numbers. And you know, if you just take a step back and you just look at the complete body of work of some of these individuals, you know, to me it's just a real common sense approach. And I think a lot of these guys that are evaluating the talent, sometimes they lose sight of that. And you know, heck, Ryan Leaf, you know, he had a good combine, but look how he turned out, you know. So I mean, the pressure to win in the NFL and the pressure to have that elite quarterback in the NFL, you know, it drives a lot of these GMs to very bad draft decisions, you know, because we all know the way to win a Super Bowl is to have an elite quarterback. You know, I mean, if you look at the last 15 years, probably 12 of those years are real solid quarterbacks, you know, top tier type quarterbacks. And so it causes these GMs to reach, you know. I mean, if Tannehill goes in the first round, that's a reach. And now to say that some team is going to trade up to the third pick, and we all know that it's going to take so much for a team like the Dolphins to move from the 8 spot to the number 3 spot, how much that's going to cost them. I mean, they're basically mortgaging their future on this one guy that may or may not pan out. You know, to me, you don't do that. You only mortgage your future if you know this guy's going to, you know, work out, or at least there's a higher probability. So I'm kind of in agreement with Trey and you, Tarvino. You know, Andrew Luck, he's about the only sure thing in this draft as far as the quarterback position. RG3's got some question marks. And this Tannehill, he's got so many question marks, I don't even know why that is. You know, him being a first round pick.
Absolutely, you have to take the best player available. You know, some of these people, like you said, tunnel vision. They're trying to get what they need. But how are you going to pass up on Trent Richardson or somebody? Are you going to try to go get a Tannehill? You don't even know what this guy's about. You can get a quarterback in the 4th, 6th round somewhere that could turn into somebody. You know, Tom Brady, 6th rounder. You know, there's some good quarterbacks out there that nobody's really talking about. I'm sure that's going to step up. But trust me, Tannehill will be handing water to the players next year if you draft him. He's not going to ever step on the field in the NFL, and if he does, it's going to be a short time.
It'll be interesting to think, I think, if we do see the Dolphins or the the two teams that I've heard about who might do this is the Dolphins and the Browns. Of course, the Browns would only be a one-spot jump, but they're going to have to pay for it. Yeah, I really do. I think I agree with Chris. I mean, if you're going to have a quarterback, I mean, I don't think Tannehill is going to be the kind of guy who's going to have you 10 years in the NFL. I don't have the left tackle or the left guard, you know, on his blind side who I can get for the next 10 years. And I think there's a couple guys out there, like Chris said, Riley Reiff, Matt Khalil, who are going to be guys who are going to start in the NFL for 10 years. If you can guard someone's blind side, you know, maybe that makes Colt McCoy a better quarterback. I don't know. I don't know if Colt McCoy is ever going to be a great quarterback. But certainly if you can't keep your mediocre guy upright, Tannehill is not going to be having any success with a team without a line. And I think that's what these GMs need to think about. I know it's not a sexy pick for GMs because, you know, no one yells from the big offensive tackle, number 3 overall pick, but no one seems to remember him after he's been there 10 years and, you know, 10 Pro Bowls straight, like some of these guys have done the last couple drafts. I mean, they've just been amazing offensive tackles, and I think that's where you got to go with some of these teams.
Yeah, you have to go for a sure thing. You have to, like Chris said, you have to make sure that person you're getting in that first round is someone that's going to hit the field immediately. And I know sometimes a quarterback you can get, and you have to set them out. Not everybody can be, you know, Cam Newton, Sam Bradford, and some of these guys. But, I mean, if you can get an offensive line to anchor your line, you know, an offensive lineman, if you can get a Justin Blackmon, that's a sure thing, a Trent Richardson, a sure thing, Claiborne, sure thing. I mean, you see what I'm saying, guys? You have to get that person that is guaranteed it's going to help your team.
Tannehill,
come on. I mean, I'm
still baffled about that. I could even see trading up for someone like Justin Blackmon, who I think is just a phenomenal athlete. It can do really well. I mean, if you're the Vikings, you know, at the 3 pick, how good could Christian Ponder, he's a great receiver. I know they got some pretty decent ones, but and they have some other needs as well. But I think Matt Khalil, if I'm the Vikings, I'm staying there. I'm picking Matt Khalil because that guy's, I think he's about as real deal as it gets.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just hard to bring these quarterbacks in, guys. And every now and then you'll find a diamond in the rough like Andrew Luck or Cam Newton. Because you guys have got to – I mean, just think, you don't come in as a rookie as a quarterback and do well. Look at Aaron Rodgers. He sat out like 3 years behind Brett Favre, which probably helped him. But if you draft your Miami and you get Tannehill, what is he going to do, guys? I mean, you need – more than that, in Miami, you need somebody that's established, you know. You need someone that has game experience that's proven that they can win. And I think they could get somebody like that cheaper than they could trading up. Like Chris said, you go from 8 to 3, that's going to cost you a lot. And unless you're taking a Trent Richardson or a Blackmon or that lineman from USC, it's not going to be worth it. It's not worth the gamble. You could stay at 8 and get a great player there without giving up anything.
Yeah, I think, and Tarver, I think one of the really things to watch out for in the draft is in overall, like my surprise picks. I think it's going to be a surprise pick if over half the first round is an SEC players. And, you know, I'm not an SEC guy, but, I mean, you have like 4 Alabama players who are at least locks for first round, you know, several South Carolina. And you're talking about LSU, at least 2 guys in the top 10. This draft is going to be so SEC heavy that if you are, you know, your team is – you know, from college, you're watching them. You're watching these SEC guys. They're going to come off the board left and just over and over and over again. There's just so much talent that's going to be drafted in this first round from the SEC. It's going to be ridiculous.
I think Mark Barron at safety from Alabama will be one of the steals of this whole draft. I think he's going to come in and start right away in the NFL. This kid's great. You have Courtney Upshaw. Like you said, Alabama's great. These guys are loaded. Like, that shows you how deep the SEC was last year and good with LSU and Alabama. That's probably 10% of the draft is their team. So, Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, my surprise, you know, immediate impact player from this draft, I really like Melvin Ingram. I like his versatility. And depending on which team drafts him. I mean, this is a very versatile guy. I mean, he could play. They're even saying that they're, you know, he's a defensive end by trade, but they can move him out, almost like a DeMarcus Ware type player. He's a hybrid linebacker slash defensive end. Most draft mock drafts have him going around the 13 to 15 range. You know, I think if he were able to land somewhere like in Arizona, I think this guy could really put up some good numbers, have an immediate impact for a defense that's kind of needing to add some pressure on that quarterback.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great pickup. I saw him the last couple of years, and this guy was a touchdown machine on defense, and he's a lineman.
Yeah.
So
he really gave
like
all the Tigers a lot to handle.
He did. I mean, you know, and he just absolutely destroyed Georgia when they played. It's like, I think he had a fumble return for a touchdown, and he had an interception for a touchdown, and this is a defensive lineman, guys, and he's the size of all of us put together.
Yeah.
And he can run down the field well, but, you know, in the coming weeks, we're going to do our draft. You know, we're going to do a mock draft with all of us, but we're going to start breaking down college football a little bit, conference teams, and, you know, before we blink our eyes, you know, it's going to be fall and football is going to be in the air. We're going to see if Florida State can, I know Trey loves the Seminoles, see if they can win it all this year. And Chris and I are Auburn fans, so we'll be seeing if Auburn can bounce back with Kyle Frazier and company. And it's going to be an exciting summer. You know, a lot of baseball to cover, a lot of football. And with these scandals, guys, you never know what's going to happen next week.
Exactly. You never know who's going to show up in a strip club or have a.
I wonder if Saban's going to be on his jet ski. He likes to ride with a couple of 20-year-old twin sisters riding down the lake in Birmingham or something. But you never know, guys, what can happen. And I want to go back to Petrino before we go. We have about. Let's see, three and a half minutes left. I don't want the listeners to think I'm judging this guy because I don't want to be that kind of person, you know. I'm not without fault myself, you know, in life. So, but this guy's a leader. He leads kids. He has the lead them in adulthood, too, and teach them how to be men. But I think Arkansas fans, if you're listening, you're losing your coach. And the coach I'm going to hire at Arkansas, guys, and you help me with this, Gus Malzahn. Comes to Arkansas. He knows the school. He knows the state. He knows all the high school coaches. What do you think about that pick if he gets fired?
You know, Tarvin, that's not a bad pick, but there's a couple of other good guys rolling around there. And I don't know if I said I don't fire him, so I'm not looking to replace him yet because I think I stand pat with Petrino. That's what I'm going to do. But if they do fire him, that's not a bad pick.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. You know, he'd be basically moving over from Arkansas State to Arkansas. You know, definitely wouldn't be a bad idea if that's the way that Arkansas chooses to handle the situation with Petrino. And just to kind of add on to your points, Harvin, you know, Petrino is the face of the University of Arkansas. I mean, you know, nobody can name not the average fan can't name who the president of Arkansas University is or who the athletic director is. I mean, when people think of Arkansas University, the first guy that they're going to name is Bobby Petrino. And, you know, these head coaches, especially in the football programs, you know, there's so much visibility and exposure. You know, everything that they do is monitored in the public eye, you know, and so they have to be mindful of that, you know, every move that they make is going to be scrutinized and, you know, people are watching and people are waiting for them to mess up, you know, so they can report and get the rumor mill started. So, Arkansas, they've got a tough decision ahead, and you know what's the right decision, what's the wrong decision. It all depends on what's important to you. You know, do you want that person that is the face of your university to be, you know, a leader by example, you know, or does winning matter? So I guess we'll find out in the coming weeks, you know, what Arkansas decides and where they want their university to go in the future.
Yeah. Well, guys, I want to thank you both for coming on and being co-hosts with me, and all the listeners out there, join us next Sunday, 5 Eastern. We possibly could have a show during the week, and I'll let you know, give you some notice, but I hope you have a great week, and everybody had a good Easter, and again, thanks, Trey and Chris, for coming out.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on, Tarvin.
Yeah, it's fun. Anytime.
All right, guys. Well, we'll talk at you soon.
All right. Take it easy. Y'all have a great day.
Happy Easter.
You too. Good night.
Happy Easter.
Bye. We good? Oh, my little.